are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Tuesday, everybody. This is the last day without Timberwolves basketball since last Friday. Four straight days without Timberwolves basketball, so you've almost made it. Of course, the Wolves take on the Pelicans on Wednesday night, and will look to snap their seven-game losing streak. Thankfully, they're playing the Pelicans, although there may be, I guess even some added pressure. The Pelicans have lost 11 straight games and play against the Brooklyn Nets tonight on Tuesday. So if the Nets do beat the Pelicans, that means 12 straight losses for Brooklyn, seven straight for the Wolves. Something will have to give on Wednesday. And man, I hope it's the Wolves winning. Plus, I mean, who knows? Typically teams on back-to-backs don't perform as well as teams that aren't, but the Wolves, after a four-game layoff against the Pelicans on a back-to-back on the road, who knows? It should give the Wolves the added advantage, but the last time the Wolves had a significant layoff right after Thanksgiving, things didn't go well. Of course, that was a matinee game against Memphis, but all that to say, the Wolves should have the rest advantage on Wednesday as well, and thankfully they're going to ease back into things with a Zion Williamson-less New Orleans Pelicans squad that's won just six games on the year. So today we're going to talk mostly about potential trade notes, just some of the rumors that have kind of trickled out since Sunday. We touched on it a little bit on Monday's show, and it's kind of the hot topic right now. And quite frankly, it's probably the most exciting thing we can talk about related to the Wolves with no games to speak of. And then we're going to take a look at the league-wide power rankings as well on a number of different sites as we take a step back and look at the Western Conference landscape as a whole and where the Wolves fit into said landscape. Okay, so most of the trade rumors that we've discussed so far this year, or at least in the last few days, more earnestly, have centered around Robert Covington and that he's the Wolves' most attractive trade piece. That remains true given his contract and his ability as one of the premier 3-and-D players in the league. The Wolves, he's got 2 years left on his deal. He's obviously had the knee surgery in the offseason. And given he's about to be on the wrong side of 30. He's about to turn 30, and those 2 years left look really good right now. If the Wolves overplay their hand and wait too long, they're going to look a little bit less attractive, even if they still look okay. Basically, his value could decrease over the next couple of years if they don't strike while the iron's hot. And the other advantage the Wolves have is there aren't likely to be too many 3-and-D guys on the trade market right now or even available this summer. It's not a great free agent class. And outside of maybe J.J. Redick on a terrible Pelicans team, and he wouldn't be considered a 3-and-D guy, mostly just a 3 guy, there aren't going to be that many more attractive options than Covington. So if teams have assets to burn, he's an attractive guy to spend them on, and that is to the Wolves' advantage, to be sure. So I'm beginning to think it's more likely than not. I've kind of talked myself into this over the past few days. More likely than not that Covington is moved. I just don't think it happens till closer to the deadline. The thing that I think the Wolves are waiting for, they want to see kind of where this team is over the next few weeks. Nobody's going to pull the trigger on a major trade at this point, a couple days after that December 15th unofficial kickoff to trade season, when all players signed in free agency over the summer can be traded. I think the Wolves, I mean, even though they lost seven in a row, they're only a game out of eighth place in the West, which is insane. And this new regime didn't have playoff expectations, I don't believe, this year, regardless of what was kind of sold to everybody and not directly by them, but you know, the team, the new regime, they want to win, all that. Obviously, Ryan Saunders wants to win, no question about it. But I don't know that they had playoff expectations. But since the Wolves are only a game out and they showed the ability to be competitive with good teams in the first, you know, third of the season, or I guess first 20% of the season, I think it's likely that the Wolves hang on. They wait and wait and wait. If the Wolves are still in the hunt close to the deadline, unless they get absolutely blown away, I don't think they make a major move. I think they wait until the summer. Coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, the Golden State Warriors, the rumors are that they're unlikely to make a move themselves regarding D'Angelo Russell in the near term, unless they get blown away as well. There's no reason to rush anything with him. I mean, the only advantage would be they could tank even further and gain more assets, but it's likely that the Warriors would do better for themselves hanging on to Russell and trading him next summer for assets than trading him now for assets and then flipping those assets for another star in the summer, rather than making more work for themselves and allowing there to be some natural depreciation as they make all these swaps. I think it makes sense for them to key in on Russell having a strong second half of the season. He'll get the opportunity to play with Curry when Curry comes back from injury. I'm sure that they'll get some run together, even though they'll be careful with the Warriors, a bottom feeder at this point this season. But my guess is Golden State would like to see Russell and Curry next to each other for a few games and then also allow Russell to inflate his numbers a bit on a bad team the second part of the season and then ask more for him this summer. I think the Wolves will be very careful with any potential Covington trades and do the same. Not suggesting that Covington's quite on the same level as D'Angelo Russell, but the Wolves, there's no reason for them to move him. He's not an expiring contract. Which leads me to Jeff Teague, who I believe will get traded. And he is an expiring contract, $19 million. His numbers are up lately. He's moved to the bench, has had more freedom to boost those numbers. I think that the move to the bench was mutually beneficial for both parties, the Wolves and Teague, in that it will raise his trade value. He's more likely to go to a playoff contending team. And the Wolves are going to likely get more for him because he's playing well off the bench. He's still been bad defensively, but he's been good enough offensively that I'm sure that there's a team looking at him as potential instant offense, somebody that could lead their second unit. And if the Wolves get anything for him, it makes sense to move him. They'll need to get some sort of point guard back so that they aren't stuck with just Shabazz Napier and 2 minutes from Jordan McLaughlin, which I think through the four games we watched were enough for this season for Wolves fans. But other than that, I mean, if the Wolves get any sort of asset in return, Teague's going to be on the block. I don't think anybody else is likely to be traded. There could be potential throw-ins as sweeteners, but there aren't any other major contracts unless the Wolves are able to attach Gorgui Dieng to, for instance, the Covington contract. If there's a team that desperately wants Robert Covington and the Wolves can get a pick or something out of it and attach Gorgui Dieng, maybe there's a situation where the Wolves can trade Covington and Dieng and maybe, you know, giving a pick back like a second rounder or something to get a first and, you know, some sort of asset, a young player, somebody on a reasonable expiring contract, something like that is maybe the only scenario in which Gorgui gets moved. He's got one more year after this one on his deal. And maybe it's Noah Vonleh, who's now out of the rotation. Gorgui was playing better. Maybe Noah Vonleh is moved for a second round pick or something on his 1 year vet minimum deal, which is still a great deal for Noah Vonleh. And it's too bad he's not in the rotation, but for that moment in time where they kind of both were in the rotation and they both got some minutes, Gorgui did outplay him. And I'm sure at some point Vonleh will get another shot, but it, you know, if the Wolves can get anything for him, I mean, he's on a minimum contract. So if you can trade that off for a second round pick or something like that, then you do it without really asking too many questions. So all that to say, we're probably not going to talk as much about the trade market in the next few days as the Wolves get back to action, because I really don't think anything happens soon. But as rumors crop up, we'll definitely take the time to cover those and what their likelihood of occurring might be. I also didn't want to spend too much time talking about Kyle Lowry on this podcast because I don't think that's a realistic trade target at this stage with the Raptors playing so well. But that's the one other star level name outside of D'Angelo Russell that was mentioned preseason by Zach Lowe and I believe it was Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN that mentioned the Wolves as a potential Lowry suitor that Toronto was aware of when they extended Kyle Lowry for this year and next year. But now with the Raptors at 17-9 and contending for home court advantage again in the East, seems really unlikely they'll be moving Lowry, even as much as they like Fred VanVleet at point guard as well. All right, before we move on to talk more about the Wolves standing in the West and power rankings overall, I did want to mention our friends at Spotify Wrapped. If you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us at Locked On Live on Twitter and at Locked On T-Wolves, and we will share and retweet. That's at Locked On Live, the Twitter account, and our Twitter account at Locked On T-Wolves will share and retweet your post for your top Locked On podcasts for the year. All right, I wanted to take our weekly look at power rankings from across the NBA blogosphere and look at what all the, I guess, reputable national sites are saying about the Timberwolves. Of course, it's not generally positive, but Remember, the Wolves are only a game out of the playoffs in the Western Conference. So, you know, people can't be too down, I guess, even though the Wolves have lost seven in a row. Our friends at Sports Illustrated, SI.com, actually have the Wolves ranked the highest of our sites that we look at. They have the Timberwolves at number 18. They don't really have much commentary besides talking about potentially trading Robert Covington. They have the Wolves a spot behind the Pistons, a spot ahead of the Thunder, a couple ahead of the Blazers and Spurs. I think right now you could argue the Blazers, Spurs, and Thunder are all better than the Timberwolves, but I don't know that the Pistons are, despite Derrick Rose going off on offense suddenly, but you know, still playing in the way that he does and struggling on defense. The Kings have also jumped ahead of the Wolves, both in the standings and the power rankings, according to CBS, as well as the Suns. I would probably almost flip that grouping. We'll get more into this in our last segment, but those teams in the West, I don't know that the Wolves, I think they're still probably going to be better than Sacramento and Phoenix when it's all said and done, believe it or not. But I don't know about the teams right behind the Wolves, the likes of the Blazers and Spurs. I feel like those guys are gonna bounce back a little bit. But at any rate, CBS has the Timberwolves ranked number 24 and dropped them six spots this week, noting that Karl-Anthony Towns is shooting 35% on three-pointers during the losing streak. He was shooting 44% before the losing streak. So there's a couple things at play there. Number one, Towns has never shot 44% for a season, but he's been over 40% a couple times. So there was going to be some regression. Number two, he's always been a better than 35% three-point shooter, so he's going to shoot better than that moving forward. And I think there's a little bit of a chicken and the egg there, I guess, in that part of the reason the Wolves are slumping is Towns shooting as well as everybody else. And then, and I think that's going to bounce back as the Wolves do. And maybe not to the tune of the, you know, 9-7 or 10-8 or whatever they were before the losing streak pace, but they're not going to lose, you know, a crazy number of games the rest of the season. This is still going to be a decent team. So that will bounce back. It's not some sort of crazy regression. Also, they have the Wolves just one spot ahead of the Knicks, who won two games this week, but somehow rose five spots after winning two games. I don't really understand that one. It's a little bit of New York overreaction, I suppose. NBA.com has the Wolves at number 22, which is down six spots from number 16 last week. They always have the best commentary with their power rankings. They note that the Wolves were the number 12 team defensively in points per possession through November, which is their first 18 games. So far in December, they're last in the league over their seven-game losing streak, allowing 123.5 points per 100 possessions over the losing streak. It does note that four of the seven opponents have been top 10 offenses, and then, and I guess that matters. And then also that the opposing teams have, the losing streak has been more about how opposing teams shooting the ball well in the paint than outside the arc. And then they also note the Wolves against Pelicans, which actually, I guess I was a game off on that. The Pelicans have lost 12 straight. If they lose to Brooklyn, it will be 13 straight against seven straight losses for the Wolves on Wednesday night. The last site we'll look at is ESPN. They actually had the Wolves ranked 14th before last week, and so they dropped them all the way to 21, and that's a seven-point drop, and blames the defense, of course. They've allowed 51.3% on field goal attempts during the seven-game losing streak and allowed 127.4 points per game. So everybody basically, except for SI, which had the Wolves at 18, everybody else has them in the low 20s in terms of their league-wide ranking. That feels about right. I think they're probably going to end up, you know, when it's all said and done, in the 18 to 20 range, which again, we're now projecting out the next two thirds of the season or whatever. But I think that clearly they're not as bad as they have been on this losing streak. There's a lot of little tweaks that are going to help a lot. The schedule at some point will get a little bit more favorable again. It's been a little bit rough lately. And then also the Wolves will get Jake Lehman back and, you know, eventually start making a few more threes than they have been during the streak, at least. There's also been a little bit of bad luck with opponent shooting. The Wolves continue to get crushed by lead guards on opposing teams, and part of that's due to the scheme that they play on against the pick and roll, with Towns dropping deep into the paint. It feels like over the last, at least during the losing streak, Towns has been dropping just a tad too far against some of these players. But look back at the game they played against Luka Doncic just not even quite 2 weeks ago. They played him extremely well. They allowed a guy who's essentially a 34% three-point shooter to launch a bunch of threes and then forced him into some tough shots in the paint because of the drop coverage. So it's hard to really get too upset about that and blame the field goal percentage on that specifically. Although Towns has struggled a little bit, as has everybody else in the team defensively over the past week plus, I'm not ready to throw up my hands and say that the scheme is broken at this point. All right, before we get into talking a little bit more about the Western Conference landscape as a whole, did want to mention our new friends at Breaking Tea. If you're looking for a last-minute fun sports gift for the holidays, go to breaking.com/lockedon. Breaking Tea makes sports t-shirts around teams' passion moments. Great for all fans. Go to breakingtea.com/lockedon and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and fun sports gifts. That's breaking.com/lockedon. Search their site for great shirts and fun sports gifts. All right, before we call a wrap on today's episode, I did want to just give that brief overview of the Western Conference standings and where the Wolves stand. It's probably not quite as bad as you would expect. As I mentioned earlier, the Wolves are actually only, they're somehow only a game back of the eighth spot in the West. Now, there's a ton of teams jumbled up there. Between the Kings at number seven, the Thunder at number eight, who actually have the same record, and then all the way through the, I'm going to say the Grizzlies, actually, there's just this group of eight teams that are all within 2.5 games of each other. The Kings and Thunder are 12-14, down to the Grizzlies at 10-17. The Wolves are in the middle at 10-15. They're a half game ahead of the Spurs, who are 10-16, and a game behind the Blazers, who have played a couple more games and are 11-16. It's just kind of a weird grouping of teams. One would think that the Kings might have the highest upside. The Phoenix Suns are about to get DeAndre Ayton back, and they need him back. They've lost three in a row, and they've only won three of their last 10 games, with the Wolves kind of in the middle there being an important win for Phoenix, as they now have a 2-0 lead in the season series.
I think the Suns and the Kings probably have the biggest upside. The Trailblazers, everyone expected, would be a little bit better, but they've already done the emergency, get Carmelo Anthony move, and that worked out a little bit initially, and they've stabilized a bit, but with their front court injuries, I never want to count Portland out because of Terry Stotts, basically, and obviously Damian Lillard, but that team just kind of feels like they're going to be stuck in this similar spot. Same with the Spurs. I mean, there's only so much the Spurs can do. They've been relatively healthy, and yet they're still 10-16. I don't think much of the Grizzlies, despite the fact they've beaten the Wolves a couple times. They're trying to tank. They just keep winning games that they shouldn't win. John Morant has had just some huge games, but they've been resting him and have been more than willing to mail it in, you know, here and there. So given that group of teams, and the Thunder, I guess we didn't really mention the Thunder. They're going to be good because of Chris Paul and Steven Adams, but they're not going to be much beyond a 500 team. So I think you're looking at Sacramento, Oklahoma City, Phoenix, and Minnesota as four teams that'll be battling for the last two spots in the playoff picture. And at the moment, I would put the Wolves ahead of the Suns. I think that there's still some issues there that can't be solved just by getting a new point guard, which is what they did with Ricky Rubio. And despite the fact they've beaten the Wolves twice, I think that's a little bit tricky. The Thunder, I think, might have some staying power. The Kings, I don't necessarily trust in because of just how bad their season started. And I think the jury is definitely still out on Luke Walton as a coach, which I guess you could say the same about the coaching situation in Minnesota as well, as we're still only, you know, a third of the season into Ryan Saunders' tenure. But I'm not sure that the Kings have as much staying power. So I would probably rank those four teams. I'd probably go Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Phoenix, Sacramento, and I think that they end up 7, 8, 9, 10 by the time the season's over. Given the fact that we don't know what the trade deadline is going to look like, at the moment, I would put the Wolves 8th in the West, just slightly ahead of the likes of Phoenix, Sacramento, and then further down, Portland, San Antonio, and Memphis. I don't think those teams will be as seriously into the conversation as we get closer to the playoffs. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. We'll be back previewing the game on Wednesday, as the Wolves will be hosting the New Orleans Pelicans in a very winnable game. So we'll definitely have our thoughts on what that could look like. The Pelicans are just slightly ahead of the Warriors for the worst record in the West. And assuming they lose to Brooklyn tonight on Tuesday, they'll be on a 13-game losing streak headed into Target Center on Wednesday. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.